are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I think you're pretty safe that it's not going to be that bad.
Oh, good. All of our listeners must be so ecstatic.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
So I think, looks like a duck, walks like a duck, it's a duck.
But he's displayed a ton of pop.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Dumpster fire followed by a chemical spill, etc. That was the Tony La Russa, Dave Stewart, leadership.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brennis. I'm joined by Chuck Anderson and Evan Peterson. How are you doing, Evan?
I'm doing sensational, Ben. How are you doing this fine Monday?
It's not the greatest day, but it's almost over. I'm just looking forward to podcasting with you guys. What about you, Chuck? How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I'm happy that there was a rainout today so we can add another game to the slate tomorrow. And so far, the games have been very enjoyable. My teams have been doing good. I just wish I could stop my players from dropping like flies with injuries. I'm hoping that the blister from Noah Syndergaard doesn't turn into a Rich Hill type of issue. But overall, I'm good. It's been a good day of baseball.
You take that bad juju away from Noah Syndergaard. You better take it away. I will be overly devastated. I don't think I could podcast anymore if that turns into a Rich Hill situation.
Well, usually they don't. I was using Rich Hill as an exaggeration point. So I think you're pretty safe that it's not going to be that bad.
Oh, good. All of our listeners must be so ecstatic. All right, so today we're going to be talking a little bit about some of our deep league players that we're looking to try to buy in a little bit more than others are at this point in time. Evan, why don't you take us and start us off with one of the players that you think is a good deep league player to watch for at this current time.
Wow, no small talk, just getting down to the nitty-gritty. I like it. A guy that's going to be pitching against Chuck's Brewers tomorrow, I believe. So you'll kind of see how this works out for everybody. Tyler Anderson for the Rockies, who was really good at Coors last year. I mean, people want to talk about how good John Gray was at Coors. Over 78 home innings, his ERA was 3. His batting average of .265 against was high, but lower than his road split in that category, which was only 36 innings, so kind of weird sample size numbers. But on the road, he did throw quality starts against the Dodgers, the Mets, the Giants, and was one out from one in Miami. He did strike out 10 Brewers in 5 innings over one of those starts with 2 earned runs. And I really like what he showed with the increased velocity in the last 2 months of the season last year on his fastball. It was up a full tick. So I think not even just tomorrow, but going forward, he's an interesting streaming option for your teams. Do you guys agree with me? Like, Chuck, are you worried? I mean, I know you guys handled John Gray pretty awesomely today, but...
Well, I think Tyler Anderson is an interesting guy to keep track of early in the season to see if his effectiveness from last year is keeps moving forward. The one I'm trying to – my computer's not working with me. How was his K per 9 last year? How did that work out? Was he a good strikeout pitcher?
I mean, he wasn't anything overly phenomenal, but he did have a lot of good outings.
Last year he had 99 Ks through 114 innings.
Oh, well, that's more than acceptable. So, he's certainly somebody that I think early in the season, if you have the roster space, it makes a lot of sense to use him outside of Coors or in favorable matchups, even in Coors, and just see how it goes. I just would be careful of really good offensive teams in Coors or really bad locations to pitch in on the road. Tomorrow might be a good barometer because as bad as the Brewers are, and they are gut-wrenchingly horrible, as bad as they are, the one thing that they can seem to do is generate offense in most situations. So tomorrow will be a good barometer. If he gives you a quality start tomorrow, I think I'd be pretty comfortable moving forward in most of his matchups.
I mean, for me, the biggest negative to taking any Colorado starting pitcher is basically you just have to watch out for the BABIP, because as they've pointed out, you know, the BABIP just gets inflated in Coors Field. So when you're pitching maybe half of your games in Coors Field, it's going to be negatively adverse to you. And that's why his whip is always going to probably hover around a 1.25 to a 1.35. I don't know if you guys disagree with that, but that's, I mean, last year he was at a 1.29, but he had a good ERA. He had an ERA at 3.54. The K numbers are good. I still think that he's the type of player that's going to be able to keep growing. I do like him as a deep league type player to look out for. I just think that it depends on the matchup. And if you have a good hitting team, then that's the time you're actually going to have to seriously consider sitting him if you weren't already. I don't know if you disagree with that, Evan.
I was taking a look at it, kind of some of the walk numbers and whatnot. And his BABIP, once again, you got to take that 30 innings on the road, or 36 or whatever it was, with a little bit of a grain of salt. But the BABIP was pretty in line between the splits last year. So, I mean, obviously I liked him. There's a reason he's on the list. But I think even with the Coors effects, I mean, he doesn't throw anything with a ton of bend. He's got a four-seamer, a sinker, a cutter. I mean, not looking at a ton of movement, but I wish he did have just a little more velocity. Maybe that's something he can gain here in his second year. 51% ground ball rate last year too. So, I mean, maybe he can neutralize some of that, Miller Park effects if he can keep the ball on the ground.
I mean, it is a good thing, and that defense that's a good defense that he has around him, and I think that Desmond's going to be a better first baseman than what they've had the last couple years in terms of his overall fielding ability. So if you look at the rest of that infield, if he does keep generating good ground ball numbers, they'll be able to get outs, which is the nice thing about Tyler Anderson with his pitch selection. And I'm sure Chuck agrees with that.
I do. I'm wondering one more thing. Did he pitch some in the minors last year as well? It looks like he didn't start pitching in the majors until June.
Yeah, he had two starts. Well, he kind of touched all the bases last year. An A-ball, a combined 6 starts in the minors.
Okay, because I wanted to double check that there wasn't going to be an innings pitch concern, because he pitched 114 in a third innings at the major league level. So, if you're going to take a gamble like this in a league where you need him to play a prominent long-term role, I'd like to have the security of knowing that he could go at least 170, 180 innings, which if he pitched enough in the minors last year, I would think that wouldn't be a problem.
So he pitched about 30 in the minors last year, so about 144 total.
Yeah. So this is a gamble I actually like more than I thought I was going to when I looked into it. I kind of blew it off. I kind of only looked for really dominant type stuff in Coors Field. But I like this gamble more than I thought I would, so I'm glad that you brought it to our attention, Evan. I really am.
I mean, I've liked Tyler Anderson since he actually did appear in the bigs last year, because the one thing I really like about him is that his ERA falls in line with where his FIP and his XFIP are, so he's not really outperforming his peripherals. He was basically in line with what he was doing, and it's a very repeatable amount of... That's not English. It's very repeatable... God damn it, what the fuck am I trying to say? The stats he put up last year are very repeatable, because he doesn't walk a ton of people. Yes, he doesn't strike out a ton of people, but his BABIP was a little bit higher. It was at 318 last year, which he could get that just a little bit lower. But his left on base was average at 75. His ground ball rate at 51 is nice. But when his ERA is about 3.5 and his XFIP and his FIP are both around it, and he's pitching in Coors Field, yeah, I think it's very repeatable. I think that he's going to be able to have a good season. And it seems that if he has a good season and John Gray, with the other pitchers that they have in their system, it seems that they actually could start developing some pitchers there that players are actually looking to not totally avoid on every single home start. Evan, did you have anything else to add on Tyler Anderson?
No, I'd like to see him work on the changeup. I was taking a look at some things over at Brooks Baseball about how he was using it more his like second and third time through the lineup, and opponents hit over 300 off of it last year, even though it was one of his better strikeout pitches. So just something to keep in mind, and definitely a name to kind of file away.
Yeah, I agree. Why don't we move on to me, and not that I want to bring all the attention back to myself, but I'm going to talk about another player out in the West Coast, and that's Patrick Corbin. And Patrick Corbin has been announced to be the one of the rotation members for Arizona this year. He was really good a couple of seasons ago, and last year wasn't his greatest season. He had a 5.15 ERA and a 1.56 WHIP, and he only had 5 wins. But he still knows how to get strikeouts. I think that he's going to have a good bounce-back season this year. I think the injuries kind of derailed him last year, and I'm looking forward to him being able to actually come back and play well. And I think the fact that the team overall gets A.J. Pollock back on both offense and defense, I think that will help. I just think that the other moves that they've made may not be necessarily great defensively or offensively with the loss of Gene Segura, but I do think that Patrick Corbin is at the age that he's still able to come back and he's able to have a good season like he did a couple years ago. Evan, do you have anything to add on this?
Of course, you always go to me when I'm trying to formulate good statistics. But last year at Chase Field, I was looking at his hard hit rate, which was almost 43%. His previous career high was back in 2013, where it was 35.5%. And his home run rate at Chase last year, he gave up 14 home runs. Hang on one sec. Yep, gave up 14 home runs in 76 innings pitched at home. In 2013, as kind of a comparison, he gave up 9 in 109. If you managed to catch the Beck conversation that we had, the Diamondbacks bullpen sucked, and that was before they got Fernando Rodney. I like that you're going out on this limb here, but I'm just not seeing it for Corbin.
What about you, Chuck? Are you in the same boat as Evan, or do you side with me on this?
I actually am going to hem and haw here. I'm going to ride the fence line a little bit here because I think we don't have enough backlog of information to know exactly how these guys are going to develop after they've had their year off from Tommy John. Everybody was all excited because what we saw at the end of 2015, but 2016, he wasn't where we thought he was going to be. And I think this is going to be an ongoing theme that we're going to develop information on. You know, the numbers to me, when I looked at Corbin, just shouted out a guy who was trying to find himself again. You know, his strikeout rate really jumped after the All-Star break last year, 56 strikeouts in 50 innings, but his ERA got even worse. Went from 4.94 to 5.58 after the break. He's always been a guy who's been pretty good against lefties, and he, you know, last year was no exception. He only allowed a .241 batting average. So I think this is something where you almost have to treat him like he was an injured player last year or recovering from injury. And I think he's a good guy to speculate on and see exactly how it goes. I've been on record before. I think the Diamondbacks are an organization that will start to recover. Even if slowly, they're going to start to recover from the dumpster fire followed by a chemical spill, et cetera. That was the Tony La Russa, Dave Stewart, leadership. So I want to see exactly how it develops out there. And I think, you know, it's only a game, obviously, but the fact that they fought to the end and won a game on opening day, a game on which it looked like they were being dominated, might be a good sign that this organization in general is in a better direction. And I think Patrick Corbin could benefit from that. So I am not giving up on Corbin yet, but I'm not starting him for home tilts or tilts in Colorado. I'm not starting him for a while here. What I'm doing is I'm doing a wait and see approach.
I mean, for me, the reason that I'm high on him this year is because he is now a few years removed from when he did have his massive injury. And I think that he's finally going to be able to regain his form. I think that he's young enough that he's going to be able to put together a season like he had back in 2013, in which he went 208 innings. He had 178 Ks. He had a whip of sub 1.2. He had a 3.4 ERA. He had a very good season. I think that he's fully capable of being able to do that. 2015, he was just coming back from it, so I can understand why he wasn't fully recovered then. And to regain your control and everything that you've lost when you had Tommy John surgery, it's not going to come back right away. It takes more than a year for it to sometimes come back, and I think that last year was a growing period for him. And that's why I expect him to be able to bounce back. Now, I'm not a big Arizona Diamondbacks fan. I really dislike the team overall, and I really dislike how they ruin their pitchers all the time. But I think that Corbin's going to end up being their second best starter this year, and that's behind Greinke.
Yuck. So if I'll direct you over to the Fangraphs split tool, and just take a look at what he's done in two strike counts. He walked a lot of guys in two strike counts, like over double what he'd done over, you know, previous samples in his career. And also with the bases empty, he was pretty garbage last year. So just a couple things to keep an eye on.
Well, you know, Evan, I appreciate that. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. That's what I'm here for.
And we're moving on. All right, Chuck, what about you?
Well, I took this exercise a little bit maybe deeper than you guys did, which is good because that'll get a broad spectrum for us. A guy who landed in the Seattle rotation after having a really good spring and finishing the year really strong. He's a 28-year-old Cuban immigrant, if you will, and his name is Ariel Miranda. He had 10 starts out of his 12 appearances last year, and when you look at his batted ball profile, you'll immediately see that Ariel Miranda is a guy who needed to get out of Baltimore, and going to a place like Seattle made a lot of sense because he is definitely a fly ball pitcher. His best starts last year, he had under 10% ground ball percentages in those starts. He only had one home start last year, and all of his starts were in Seattle. He only had one home start where he gave up more than three runs. Now, he does give up home runs, which you'd expect from a fly ball guy, and he only went seven innings pitched in one of the 10 games he started last year. So early on in the year, he's probably only streamable at home. You know, and XFIP absolutely hates him, which feeds into our conversation that we're having earlier about how, you know, some guys pitch to their peripherals. He only had one start last year where he had less than a 4 XFIP for that start the whole year. So he gets this 8-week audition, or maybe someone else comes up hurt. Looks like Felix Hernandez was already limping around tonight a little bit, which we wish him the best, and let's hope he recovers right away. But anything could happen. This is another interesting situation because we have to figure out exactly what Ariel Miranda is. He looks like he needs, a lot of people are predicting him to go to the bullpen. But the weird thing is that this is a guy who's didn't get to America to pitch until 2015. So we have very limited information about what he was when he was in Cuba. And it appears on the surface that his performance arc has been getting better the whole time that he's been here. So Ariel Miranda is somebody to watch, in my opinion, the Seattle Mariner.
Evan, do you have anything to add on Miranda?
I mean, he gives up a lot of fly balls, which is the one thing looking at his profile that really scares me. And yeah, it drives down his BABIP because that's what fly balls do. But man, that 525 FIP last year is just kind of scary to look at and think about what essentially could happen for a guy that gave up 37% hard contact last year. So he doesn't, you know, miss a ton of bats, and it's a deep exercise, and don't get me wrong, because I think, you know, with Smiley having the injury stuff, Felix looked, you know, halfway decent. I'm pretty sure he came on to finish the rest of the inning after he kind of tweaked his ankle covering first there. So they may have need for him. Like, Iwakuma's old. There's a lot of injury risk in this rotation. Always seems like Paxton is dealing with something. So we're going to see Miranda, but, you know, are you just going to be watching the balls in the air and maybe they go over, maybe they don't? Who knows? What do you think, Ben? That's more important. What do you think?
Well, I think that it's good that he has a job for the next 6 to 8 weeks, most likely. And in a deep league, that's kind of what you're looking for, because anytime someone has playing time, it's really helpful, especially in this type of exercise where we're targeting deep league players. He may not be great, which I'm in the same boat as you, Evan. I don't think he's going to be anything fantastic because of the hard contact and the fly ball rate and everything of that nature. I'm a little bit scared, but I'm willing to at least give him a shot, because at this current time, he is going to be in that rotation as long as Drew Smiley is out, unless he's just so god-awful and there's someone in the minors who can come in and step up at this current time, which I don't know if there's going to be one of those players. I think that he's worth taking in a risk on, because at this current time, with the starting job sewn up, you can't really ask for anything else outside of that in a deep league, can you? Anyone?
I can ask for a guy that's not going to get his fastball cranked to the tune of the 1,000 OPS like he did last year. But
let's say that you're in a deep league in which he's a player who is a waiver wire consideration. Who else is on the waiver wire at that point that you would be considering that probably is going to be any better?
I guess at that point in time, in my head, I would be thinking, if I'm in this deep of a league, what relievers are on the waiver wire that could, you know, fortify, you know, my ratios a little bit better and probably give me the same amount of strikeouts as this guy?
Well, I guess a more interesting thing to me is some of the leagues that I was looking at today. Let's play a little bit of would you rather here. Would you rather take a chance on a guy like Miranda, or would you rather have CC Sabathia?
I think I'd still rather CC Sabathia.
How about you, Evan?
I'd rather just jump.
Well, the reason I say
I'm in a 16 team league, and this is the choice that I have to make.
The reason I say CC is because we've seen that even over the last couple of seasons, CC is not going to be great, but he has time periods in which he can actually put up decent numbers. I can't guarantee that Miranda is going to have that period of time that he's going to have decent numbers. And I'd like to believe that he could. I'm not entirely sure.
Okay, and then there's one more guy. How about Hyunjin Ryu? Would you rather have Hyunjin Ryu, or would you rather have...
I'd rather have Rue. As long as he's healthy, I think he's a much better candidate.
Yes.
Same with Brandon McCarthy, because he's going to be in that same type of...
Yuck.
It's yuck, but I'd still rather have Brandon McCarthy, I think, as long as he is healthy, over Miranda.
Mm. All right, well, I'm projecting a little more growth than you guys are, and I know... I'm going against my own rule here, because a lot of his best starts were in September, and those are very hard starts to gauge. At the same time, he was really good in the spring. I believe they moved him up to the number 4 spot in the rotation. I think they like him quite a bit, and I don't think we've seen a finished product yet. I'm taking some cultural adjustment, et cetera, and so forth into account for what we've seen so far. And I think he could be a pleasant surprise. So while I agree with you guys, I certainly would go with Rue over Miranda. I think Miranda's an interesting guy to take a flyer on, especially if you could get 2 starts out of him and they were at home. So Anyway, wanted to throw his name in the mix. Sometimes I just want to have people have names on their mind, so when they see him go along the bottom line or what have you, they said, "Oh, well, you know, we heard about that guy. Let's see how he actually did." One of these guys.
You only want him to get 2 starts. That's it. Nothing else. You don't want him.
I was talking about weekly leagues when you're 2 starts.
Yes. Okay, that makes more sense. I was like, "Oh, two starts and he's done. All right. Well, that's good." It's a good target to have. Evan, why don't you bring us up? Why don't you bring up your next player for us?
Well, we've done a lot of pitching, so let's take a look at some bats, if you will. The guy I wanted to bring up is Chris Owings, who started at shortstop for the Diamondbacks yesterday. And if you look at the splits for Owings, he was pretty good when he was on the field last year. If you want to use arbitrary endpoints and look month to month, you throw out June or July where he had less than 50 plate appearances combined. And he was a pretty even guy in the other four months, even though his walk rate absolutely plummeted at the end of the season, under 2% compared to 7.5% before he got hurt. Now, he hit second opening day against Bumgarner, which I think is a function of being a left-hander on the mound, probably going to see somebody like a David Peralta against righties. But, Zips has Owings at 18 steals. Steamer has him for 13. He went 21 for 23 on the base pass last year, stole 16 in 2015. And the 3 years before that, if you combine his stops, he stole at least that 16. So, yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards the higher end of that projection. I think he's going to find the playing time there in Arizona now that Ketel Marte is down in the minors, and I like him. I forgot to write down his ownership percentage, but if he's available, yeah, for a guy that's shortstop, so he could play middle infield for you if you happen to have a spot like that. He can fill in on outfield on guys that have off days. Like I like Chris Owings.
The more I'm looking at his numbers, the more I'm starting to like him, especially if they're going to bat him 2 single game.
No, like I said, I think that's just against lefties. I don't think you can expect, Peralta hit almost 310 against righties over 800 plate appearances in his career. He hits 218 against lefties. I think there's a candidate for the 2 spot right there.
Yeah.
Brandon Drury, if he gets hot, somebody like that.
I mean, I get it. I just think that as long as when he plays in the 2-hole, I think he's going to be a very good value because of the Pollock and Goldschmidt combo, basically. And it is, like you said, he is going to be the type of guy who gets on base. He does get strikeouts. You know, for a guy who had 437 at-bats last year, he still had 50-plus runs and almost 50 RBIs. He had 49. He had 277. You know, he's not really killing you anywhere other than, I guess, home runs, considering how many players hit home runs last year and to the extent of what they were hit. But I think that you could really do a lot worse than a middle infielder in Chris Owings. I know that if I have him in some of the deep leagues I play in, he's definitely a target of mine. What about you, Chuck?
Well, I've always liked Chris Owings, and he's a guy that some of the prospect analysts that I listen to a lot were very big on before he had his down stretches. The other thing I think is not being emphasized enough here is that they actually gave up quite a bit to get Ketel Marte, and so a lot of times these organizations want to look good in these trades, and yet they were willing to give Owings the lion's share of the gig. Where you've yet to see how much their defensive-minded guy that they overplayed last year, how much they're going to play him. But the point being is that this is an offensive-minded middle infielder that they actually figured out a way to get him time in center field last year when the team was struggling. So the organization has shown faith in him. He also has rewarded them already with the game-winning RBI one day into the season, albeit. And so I think he's a guy that that people should be very interested in. And if you're going to run into any injury troubles, either in the outfield or in the middle infield, I think I would give Chris Owings a shot for a while and see if he stays hot, because he's definitely had some good stretches in the past. And his hit tool was what carried him as a prospect to where he is now. And I think we may see a very usable fantasy season for Chris Owings in everything but home runs. If he gave you even 10 home runs, you'd have to be elated. But all the other things that he's showing are definitely things that, especially the steals, are things that are quite useful in fantasy.
Exactly. Like, just think about the year that he could have, and think about at the draft table the price difference between him and a guy like Ender Inciarte, who's going to score more runs, but I think in the other categories could probably put up a decent fight.
Maybe not as much an average. I think Inciarte could be closer to a 300 average, and Owings closer to 265 to 270. And obviously there will be probably a discrepancy of around 100 at bats, so that Inciarte average will carry a little bit more value. But outside of that, I agree with you. I think that the RBIs will be close, the stolen bases will be close, and I think Inciarte is probably more of an 8 home run type hitter than Owings is. But I think I agree with you. For the round difference, it could be some sneaky decent value.
Yes, thank you for agreeing with me. Ben, what about your next guy?
My next guy is going to be Travis Jankowski, actually. Now, I know Evan had just posted a Twitter poll the other day on how many steals people think that Jankowski will most likely have, and I think that poll is done. Is that correct, Evan?
Yeah, that poll finished. I actually got a couple shares and got like a meaningful sample size of like 45 votes. And he was pretty evenly distributed. I think I went by 20, 30, 40, and 40 plus maybe. And I believe most people pegged him in kind of that 30 stolen base range, which I like as a number for him.
Yeah, that's what I had when I voted on it. I voted for the 30 range as well. I peg him as like a 35 to 42 stolen base guy, depending on how many at-bats he gets for the entire season. He's not a great average guy. He's still going to hit you around 250 probably, maybe potentially a little bit better if he is able to hit the ball on the ground and use the BABIP to his better ability, I would say, in using his speed. But he's not a home run guy. He's going to get you extremely little in terms of RBIs. But he's going to get you a lot of runs, and he's going to get you stolen bases. And that can really be helpful in a deep league if you can have someone who had 335 at-bats last year, scored 53 runs and 30 stolen bases. I don't think you can really ask for a ton more in a deep league. Can you, Chuck?
No, I understand the attraction that people have to Travis Jankowski as an endgame speed guy. You know, I guess I'm the guy who always tries to put it in context, in so much as it's good to know what we think about players, but it's also important to see what an organization seems to think about that player and put that in the context of where they are. And Jankowski got quite a few at-bats last year, 335 at-bats for a guy that was relatively unknown before that outside of dynasty formats. You know, he stole 30 bases. You know, the 332 OBP is really not unplayable for a speed guy. I mean, the Reds have lived with far worse OBPs from Billy Hamilton, who granted has otherworldly speed. But the point being is that I think you got to mine these situations where, obviously, as on full display today, while the Padres were getting absolutely trounced, the organization is in full-blown transition, and they're going to want to know exactly what they have in their younger players, their players that they have control over for the next few years. And Travis Jankowski is a prime example of that. So it actually works in your favor for them to get knocked around and punted and kicked around like a redheaded stepchild for the entire season, which certainly looks like what is going to happen for the most part. I mean, when Jared Weaver is topping out at 87 miles an hour and is playing a prominent role, and Mr. Cahill is should probably not be starting anywhere, but is giving a chance to start again. I mean, there's a lot of bad things going on in San Diego, but that can benefit your fantasy team. And I think that situation actually benefits Jankowski for this year. I think they're going to know exactly what they have in Jankowski by the end of the year. And that's going to help you in the categories you want him to help you in.
I think for last year, the best thing that happened to Jankowski is obviously John Jay going down was what was most helpful for him. But I think the fact that they didn't want to bring up any of their young guys and start their clocks early was really helpful for Jankowski because they just put him out there all the time. And I had to use him in one of my really deep leagues because I actually was forced to rely on John Jay because of injuries. And when John Jay went down, I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll have to grab Jankowski now. And he ended up being a pleasant surprise in terms of runs and steals. Like I said, he kills your average. So if you play in an OBP league, then you're at least in a better spot. But he's going to get you no home runs, and he's going to get you no RBIs because the bottom third of that order is just terrible. And because he doesn't put the ball in play a ton, it's going to be tough for him to get a lot of RBIs. But once he's on base, he's going to run wild, and they're not really going to let him. They're not going to stop him. And if him and Margot are just running wild, then there's going to be a lot of opportunities for runs in San Diego, which is nice, even though we do project them to be a bad team overall. What about you, Evan? What do you think?
I mean, you guys have kind of tap danced around what I wanted to bring up and talking about his OBP. And I wanted to talk about the 11% walk rate. And if people realize that if you give him first base, and since it's the Padres, there's probably nobody on second, that he's going to end up over there fairly quickly. So I was looking at the projection systems, which have him at a 9% walk rate. I don't know how much you guys want to play the projection game there, but I think I might take the under on numbers like that, and maybe just slightly, but I think, you know, it's something that as the book kind of gets out on him, even though, you know, he stole 71 bases in rookie ball in 2013, high A, but the speed is kind of his calling card. I just wonder if you guys think the walk rate's repeatable.
I mean, I do think that his walk rate is somewhat repeatable. I think it just really depends on how his eye at the plate is, because he does sometimes swing a little freely, and this is just from watching him play in brief appearances last year. It's not like I'm actively trying to watch the San Diego Padres play baseball because I have better things to do with my time, but I do think that he's going to be able to have a somewhat repeatable season in terms of walk percentage. Do you agree, Chuck?
I completely agree. And again, if you put this in context, you know, if he could walk 11% of the time last year, when certainly no one was afraid to throw the ball down the middle, to both his kind of hitter and the fact that the Padres were probably down by a touchdown. I mean, you know, your goal as a pitcher is to not walk anyone when you're playing a team that you should beat, and you're against a hitter who's probably not going to hurt you with the home run,
right?
Or even an extra base hit. So if he did it last year, it's hard for me to imagine that he's going to have a real hard time repeating it.
So we'll call this the inverse of my Hunter Renfroe theory from this year, because his walk rate was pretty low. I'm trying to bring it up. I want to say 4.5% off the top of my head. And dude's got massive pop. So I think people learn, hey, maybe we shouldn't throw this guy the ball, and his walk rate goes up. His walk rate was 2.8% last year. My mistake. His projection systems have him at 4.5 for Hunter Renfroe. So I mean. Yeah, there's, you know, the book have already been out on these guys, but I just don't know how in this second big taste of the majors, because Jankowski did get 100 at-bats back in 2015, you know, how that affects how pitchers attack him. Does that make sense, or did I black out?
No, it does make sense. Like I said, only time will tell. I guess my only input is that the Padres situation hasn't changed greatly in, you know, over time. The rebuild is going at a snail's pace. So as far as I'm concerned, I think you're going to see a repeat of both of those numbers likely. Now, it's a little bit different because, like you said, we have more at-bats, et cetera, for Jankowski than we have so far for Renfro. But Renfro also has not displayed much plate discipline in the minors. So I think, you know, looks like a duck, walks like a duck, it's a duck.
But he's displayed a ton of pop. And I think that if there's anything that you've learned about, like, OBP and walk percentage, is that when people respect your power, the walk rate goes up. And so for him to, you know, duplicate a 2.8% walk rate this year, I don't think it's going to happen for Renfro.
Well, I think you're displaying what I would call inverse, where the two players are completely the opposite.
Exactly. You know, it's like pitcher, Stranger Things.
Yeah, the pitchers have every reason to not walk Jankowski, but he was walking anyway. And the pitchers have every reason to try and walk Renfro, and he hasn't proven that he can take a walk. So that's why I like Jankowski. I let Renfro go for Lewis Brinson in a league that has a very small minor league roster, etc. And I just I want to see some growth from Renfro before I buy into him being much of a player this year. And Jankowski is as advertised. I think that as long as he gets at bats, he's going to steal plenty of bases.
Chuck, why don't you tell us about your next player?
Well, my next player is one Yandy Diaz. I kind of got here in a roundabout way. I was the first person to throw names out there this week that we were going to talk about. And what really happened is that I looked and I thought to myself, well, with everything that's going on in Cleveland, they're likely going to have to carry another corner guy, maybe another guy who could play the outfield. And so I thought maybe Chris Colabello would actually make the team. Well, when I was researching Colabello, I realized that in his breakout season of 2015, he had a .411 BABIP. And really, the rest of his career, we've seen nothing even close to that. And I think Cleveland decided like I did, and instead, they went with a youth movement with a 25-year-old Yandy Diaz, and he started at third today. He had hit an opposite field double, which is one of the things they like about him. Also, he last year in Double A, he had a slash line of a .286 batting average with a .445 on base percentage. That included a 21.8% walk rate. And then at Triple A, he had a .325 batting average with a .399 OBP and an 11.3 walk rate. That's a great combination of things to see in a young player, that he's willing to use the whole field and that he's taking walks. So I'm pretty high on Yandy Diaz, and he's probably available in most leagues since his ascension last year kind of came out of nowhere, and the fact that they're going to let him take some lumps at third base because he's not a defensive-minded player. So I think Yandy Diaz should be someone who is on everyone's radar if they think they're going to need any help at the corner. How do you feel about Yandy Diaz there, Ben?
I mean, considering how deep of a league that I would need him in, I'm a big fan because I was targeting him in a few of my leagues this season. But that's because I'm in like 15 plus owners in every one but one of my leagues, basically. And I think he's going to be able to give you good fantasy value this year. And I'm hoping that he's able to keep it up consistently, considering what the injuries that they have out in Cleveland are. But it really just does depend on if he's going to be able to keep it up. And if he keeps banging at the bottom third of the order, then obviously he loses a little bit of my overall luster in terms of what I'm trying to target. But him being in the lineup and getting consistent playing time is just like what I was saying before. If you're going for a deep league ad, getting consistent playing time is better than getting someone who gets platooned all the time or who you can't really trust to stay healthy. Sometimes it is nice to get that consistent playing time. What about you, Evan?
Well, if you're looking for playing time, one thing you want to be able to do is to field the ball. And Diaz was voted back in 2014 as the best defensive third baseman by the managers in the Carolina League. And he also won a similar award in Double A last year as best defensive third baseman in the Eastern League. So that's good. You take a look at what he did last year as far as 71 walks and 86 strikeouts between 444 at bats between Double A and Triple A. I like that. And if, you know, Chuck, what Chuck said at the beginning of the podcast about the injury bug biting everybody, there's going to be some time for him. So I do like him as a very late name that once you hear him come up, that there could be some goodness in a deep league for you.
Anything else to add on this, Chuck?
No, I think we're all kind of excited about what we see here. And every once in a while, somebody comes out of the woodwork, and it seems like maybe Yandy Diaz is that guy this year. I think we're selling him a little bit short if we think that his potential is only going to be in deeper leagues. I mean, yes, he's got to take a couple steps forward. But part of this exercise is not only, you know, just deep league guys, but also guys that we should start to pay attention to, because if he gets hot and he has a few good games, you're going to want to put in fab money for him right away. You're not going to want to wait, because if you wait too long, then it becomes a fab war and you end up having to spend too much to get him. So just, I would keep your eye on Yandy Diaz out there. If you're, even if you're in a, you know, 12 or a 14 team mixer, just in case this starts to go really well, because those numbers really scream a lot of good things from last year.
Next, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to have a quick message from our sponsor. On Draft, it's draft day every day. Draft is a simple daily fantasy app where you can do snake drafts just like the ones you do at the beginning of season-long league. They last just one night, and they take only minutes to complete. On Draft, you can play for free, or better yet, play for money. Get this, your chances of winning money on Draft are almost three times better than your chances of winning on any other site. If you're playing fantasy for money and not spending hours a day doing it, you absolutely should be playing on Draft. Download Draft now. Just search Draft in the App Store, and it will come up first. Be sure to enter the promo code FWFB when you download it, and you will get a 100% bonus up to $600 when you deposit. Again, search Draft in the App Store, and be sure to enter the promo code FWFB. Hey, Evan, why don't you tell us about your next and final player on your Deep League list?
So Kendall Graveman was pitching tonight. The last time I checked his box score, he had two scoreless innings. Dude's an absolute worm burner of, guys that pitched 300 or more innings in the past 2 years. Graveman had the 10th highest ground ball rate. And he was better than half those names when it comes to home run to fly ball rate. But Jake Arrieta or Carlos Martinez, he's not. In fact, he leaves everything to be desired in the K category. And I found a piece of fun trivia for you guys. So of those pitchers, all of them in the majors that threw 300 innings over the past 2 years, only one guy has a lower K per nine than Kendall Graveman. Would you like to take a guess at who it is for absolutely no dollars?
Justin Nicolino.
That's Justin Nicolino?
I don't think he meets the innings requirement here. 300 innings over the past 2 years. Would you like a second guess?
No, that was the first one that came to my mind. Ben can go first.
Sorry, you said highest ground ball rate? I wasn't listening to you.
No. The lowest K9 of pitcher who has thrown 300 innings over the past 2 years. And Nicolino has barely 150 innings over the past 2 years.
Jeez, this is tough.
I have my guess ready. My guess is Tom Kohler.
Oh, that's a good guess. I will say, I don't fucking know.
I was going to say, that was intriguing radio. It's a guy that we've already brought up this podcast. It's Jared Weaver, and it's 5.15 K per nine.
Oh, how did I not guess that? That dude's had a dead arm for the last 8 years.
Yep. Weaver, Graveman, Dickey, and Mike Leake are the guys that fall in the sub-6 category of K per nine last year. So, there's a couple other things with Graveman. I'm going to see if you guys touch on this, and I'm going to jump all over you if you step on my little landmine here. So, Ben, what do you think about Kendall Graveman?
I love him. I mean, I've grabbed him in, I believe, every one of my leagues except for one currently. I'm a huge fan of him. I think that K-Ray can actually come up. I think that if Marcus Semien maybe plays a little better defense, or Franklin Barreto comes up, that ground ball rate will be super helpful with the offense or with the defense in the middle infield. I think that he's the type of player who's able to actually step up. He's already shown that he could potentially be Oakland's best pitcher, and they've had Sonny Gray do well at times. They have Sean Manaea, who had a really good second half of the year. I think that I really am a big fan of Grayman, and I'm looking forward to what he can do. I mean, right now he's at 3 innings pitched, 4 Ks. He does have 1 walk and 4 hits given up with 2 earned runs, but it is nice to see him have a K per inning. I mean, yes, he is going against the Los Angeles Angels, but it is still nice to be able to see him have a bunch of Ks this early in the game. What about you, Chuck?
I didn't realize that he pitched 186 innings last year. And really, considering the ball club that he was on, his 4.11 ERA certainly works in deep leagues. I think he's also streamable in leagues where you need, you know, where you need to find people for 2 start weeks, as long as he doesn't have too brutal of matchups. I think I've been a little overly negative. I think you have to have the right other staff members on your pitching staff, meaning that I don't think you want to have too many guys that have this minuscule of a K rate that you're using on a very regular basis. But I think in the right situation, I agree with you guys. I think he's being underrated. So I applaud you guys. This is an excellent deep league find. Well done.
Well, just to give a little heads up of what happened. So he struck out Martin Maldonado and Yunel Escobar, walked Cole Calhoun, and of course gave up a home run to Mike Trout, who is the best player in the world.
Trout got a home run?
Yes, he did.
Yes, that's a home run for me.
And for everybody else in the world, because we all get to enjoy Mike Trout home runs.
That's my first home run of the season from any one of my players.
Good job.
I can't believe, of all the players on my roster, all of the power bats, I had to wait till the last game with Trout.
Well, that's why you took him first overall.
I didn't. I didn't take him first overall. It's a dynasty league. Oh. I'm special. I got him for AJ Pollock and Dansby Swanson.
You are the trade master.
Thank you. Yeah.
But real quick on Kendall Graveman, because nobody brought up what I was hoping that you would look at, was his uptick in first strike percentage, which jumped 5% to 64.5% last year. And most people look at that and say that's pretty good. However, you want to caveat that, because after an 0-1 count in 2015, Graveman was striking out almost 23% of batters in those situations. Last year, dropped to under 18%. So it's one thing to get into those counts, quite another to finish them off. And just a quick lesson at looking at surface numbers, that sometimes you got to dig a little deeper. But I do still love Kendall Graveman. He was my boyfriend last year, and you know, we still talk from time to time.
You guys had a bad falling out, I'm guessing, didn't you?
It was just, it was kind of hit or miss there, and I was looking at other other dudes, and what can I say? You know, I just kind of left him out there, and somebody picked him up and, you know, benefited with those 186 innings. No, cool, they didn't.
Cool story, bro.
It was great. I love it. Tell me a story about your third guy.
My guy is Lucas Duda, and yes, I'm a homer for any Mets players. But no, Lucas Duda has slid on draft boards. He's only 9.5% owned in ESPN. The dude had hit basically 50 plus home runs before last season, the previous two. So in 2014, 2015, he had hit 50 plus home runs during those two seasons. He's a big power bat. He has the ability to get 80 RBIs. He's not a total drain on the batting average all the time. Yes, there will be times in which he won't be overly helpful, but I think that Lucas Duda is, at worst, a corner infielder on a decent team, and I don't understand why he's being so undervalued given his power potential, that it just frankly kind of surprises me that people aren't in on him. And maybe it's because of the back injury from last year, but I'm thinking that he's finally going to get healthy. You know, he'll still hit you around 250 for the regular season, but he is a good OBP guy. You know, back in 2014, he had a 349 OBP in 2013 and 2015 at 352 OBP. So I do think that he is able to get a ton of value for you. He had, like I said, 25-plus home runs in both of those seasons. I don't really see where the downside is to taking him late in drafts concerning how late he's being drafted. Do you disagree with me, Chuck?
No, I actually agree with you wholeheartedly. I think you're seeing a little bit of ageism. He's got to be close to 30 because he was a really old prospect when he came up. He might even be a little over 30.
He just turned 31 in February.
Okay. So you get some ageists out there that don't like to invest late in their draft in older players. And I think both him and Neil Walker, I think you had people that were scared off by back injuries. I know in a league that I had, it was a long-time keeper league, I actually went away from Walker this offseason for fear about recovery from a back surgery and exactly what it can do for power. But Duda looks great right now, and I think it's a travesty that I didn't end up with a piece of him in any of my drafts. And I think the people where he's still available, I think he's someone that I would look to find a spot for on my roster right now, because one thing about the Mets lineup not being all that deep, with guys that have performed badly in recent years, I think there is a black hole to the middle of that lineup that he can fall in and give you surprising all-around numbers. So I like this pick a great deal.
What about you, Evan?
You don't care what I think. You're just being nice.
All right. Goodbye, Evan.
No. So the one thing when you take a look at Duda is you take a look at the tumbling BABIP, and you'd be like, oh, he's probably just selling out for power and putting more balls in the air. No. Last year, he had a career low in the fly ball rate. That was under 40%. And so you take a look at him hitting like 229, and it's a real fear that I have that he's probably not going to hit over 250, which I think is pretty considerable. I know you're not really looking him to bolster a bunch of your ratios. If you're in an OBP league, yeah, the walk rate plays, but he's had a ton of health concerns. He's not Ike Davis, we'll put it that way, but you said at worst he's at best he's a corner infield for your team, for a good team, and he's definitely not a starting first baseman for me, but as like a util guy or somebody in an OBP league, why not roll the dice until he's on the shelf?
Why you gotta be so negative about Ike Davis?
Because I loved him so much, and fucking spring fever or valley fever or whatever just robbed him of everything.
Did you see him play in the WBC for Team Israel?
I didn't watch any of the WBC this year.
Oh. Well, we did have an Ike Davis sighting, just in case anyone was wondering. And it's funny because poor Ike Davis, when you get a tryout to be the first baseman in Oakland and you can't beat out the worst hitting first baseman, arguably ever in Major League Baseball history, in Yonder Alonso, it says a lot of bad things about you. So this is just a completely pointless aside, but I just had Ike Davis thoughts and they just spewed out randomly. So I apologize.
Pour one out for Ike Davis, man.
Chuck, who's your third player?
My third player, again, going on the deep tip, is one Robbie Grossman, who is actually already 27 years old. He's been scooting around the minor league system since 2008, getting cups of coffee here and there. He is a switch hitter much like he's been prone to do in recent years. Last year, he ended up with a nice hefty OBP. And today, he had two walks in the Twins game, so that's pretty normal. You think he's the perfect fit on the Minnesota roster because he can platoon both at DH and in left field. He is a dreadful outfielder, but the Twins are a team that is in such need of covering at bats and getting productive at bats deep in their order, that I think Robbie Grossman could repeat the really good year that he had last year, which included a 344, 418, 576 slash line. So Robbie Grossman might just be in the right place at the right time. If you're in any format where you have daily lineup settings, I think Robbie Grossman is an interesting guy, maybe an interesting guy for DFS as well when he gets to pound on left-handed pitching. So what do you guys think about Robbie Grossman in deep leagues this year?
Excuse me while I throw up.
Well, you talk about right place in the right time. Like, he started at DH, what is it? Parks hurt and Vargas sucks, or the other way around, or, I mean, either or the other.
Park is good, and they just don't want to use him, and Vargas is hurt.
Okay, there you go. And you want to talk about his two walks. You can also talk about his three strikeouts and the 25% strikeout rate that he's shown in basically every, you know, decent sample size that he's shown at the major league level. So who knows, as far as with the Twins and everything else they kind of have going on behind the scenes, how much playing time you're actually going to see out of him.
Sorry.
Ben, are you done?
I was falling asleep by Evan talking about Robbie Grossman. Sorry. I mean, Robbie Grossman, look, I have absolutely no issue with the pick because as of right now, the fact that the Twins are having him sort of DH is kind of telling of how bad that organization is. They just don't have any pieces to start over Robbie Grossman. Like, and I get that he gets on base a lot, but I don't know. I can't get behind this because I just don't see any upside anywhere unless you're strictly going for OBP in an OBP league. He's not the type of guy who's going to get you a ton of stolen bases. He's not the type of guy who's going to get you a ton of home runs or RBIs. The offense just isn't good enough for him to be able to get all of that. And I just don't think that Robbie Grossman overall is that great of a player that he's going to be able to just go and have a great season. I mean, last year he had 332 at-bats. He had 11 home runs, which was nice, and 49 runs, which was pretty good, considering how many actual at-bats he had. But I can't guarantee that he'll actually be able to score the same amount of runs. That could be real fluky, considering that Brian Dozier felt like he just hit a home run on every other pitch, and, you know, there's Miguel Sano, who's going to strike out a ton, and we don't know what's going to happen with Buxton. Mauer's not a great home run guy, so, you know, if he's not hitting anything more than a single, who knows if Robbie Grossman's scoring. There's just a lot of flukiness in Robbie Grossman to believe in this year, I feel.
I guess I don't really have an argument against your arguments, except for the fact... Yeah, except for the fact that somehow or another he did manage to sort of get it done last year for people who were in a jam that needed an outfielder in deeper leagues. And somehow or another he has a job right now, which I'm not saying he should have a job per se, but I think it's going to be curious to chart his usefulness in deeper leagues and in OBP leagues this year. And that's all I was trying to bring to light. So I think I went too, Ben. Take that.
Like you said, right place, right time.
I agree with that. Right place, right time. All right. Do you guys have anything else to add on any of the players that we've discussed today by any chance?
No. Do you have any other thoughts in general? I mean, we have actual baseball on TV, so I don't know if you want to touch on either anything that happened today, yesterday, anything like that.
Well, Noah Syndergaard did leave with a blister, so I'm hoping he's okay. But we kind of touched on that at the very beginning of the podcast. I don't know if there was any other injuries. I was absolutely swamped at work today, so I have absolutely no idea if there was actual injuries that occurred. But do you guys know of anything?
Junior Guerra left after three innings and four strikeouts giving up a few runs in the Brewer game. He bunted, and then he pulled a calf muscle. So he's going to immediately go on the DL, taking one of the worst pitching staffs in the history of organized baseball and making it even worse. So that definitely happened. And before we go too far in this discussion, I just want to mention that Evan is a ridiculous tease because he said he was going to get me up to date and up to speed on Malik Smith, and he has not talked about it.
Oh, so 60 seconds on Malik Smith. Here we go.
And you're done.
And, I mean, I put out a Twitter poll that didn't receive quite as much love, but, I mean, you know, Malik Smith started yesterday, Colby Rasmus beginning the season on the DL. So, I know I had talked to Matt during the Braves preview about the 20 bases that he stole last year and how quiet that was. I don't know how comfortable I feel projecting him over 20 again this year, but you want to talk about moving parts and Tampa Bay definitely falls in that discussion of movable pieces and whatnot. So I do think there could be playing time opening up for him later on in the year, even if Rasmus comes back and they do decide to put his dirty, dirty hair in the outfield. Is anybody on Malik Smith as a you know, deep league guy, or maybe against him for other reasons?
I am completely on board, and I'll tell you a differing reason. They switched out the turf in Tampa, and the turf is playing visibly much faster. So defensive outfielders are really important there. And the other thing that happened with it is that, you know, they played Sam Fuld in left field for a long stretch of time there when Sam Fuld was offering relatively nothing batting wise, and Malik Smith made a couple diving plays to stop balls from getting all the way through the gap. And I think that this is one of those situations where, when you put it in context, if you're looking for stolen bases, this is potentially a wonderful situation to find them in, because you are going to see not only the Tampa Bay organization leaning towards defense in the outfield, but you're also going to have the side effect that American League East pitchers are even in worse shape than they were before this, which is really, really scary, because the AL East was already really tough to pitch in. So I wanted to feed off your Malik Smith minute and give me a ranting minute of my own, which I did quite successfully.
Yeah. I was just going to correct myself real quick before I received any more hate than Ben's going to throw at me. Malik Smith only stole 16 bases last year, but Zips had him projected for 35 going into this year. Steamer had him at 13.
Opinions will vary. And before I don't get a chance to, before we get out of here, I will help cut to the chase and say that I am Chuck Anderson, and I am at Just Chucking It on Twitter, which we didn't get a chance to announce earlier. So if you have any questions for me, I've got quite a few lineup questions this week, which I enjoy the interactions on Twitter a great deal. Bradley Newman and a bunch of other people from Twitter regularly get in touch with me, and I appreciate it. So, and thanks for your listens. We're doing great, and we're wonderful. It's wonderful to have Draft on board as a sponsor now. So we'll have more information, I think, on different ways that we're playing on Draft, and you can beat us. Somebody probably wants to try and beat the great Evan Peterson on the Draft website at some point or another.
Well, I haven't done the full research on whether or not it's completely legal in Iowa for me to play. So in case there are any law enforcement listening, I abide by all posted laws and regulations that are bestowed upon me. Wink, wink.
Ben, are you still with us?
No, I left when you guys started talking about Malik Smith. Evan, did you give your Twitter handle for our listeners?
Nah, you find me at EasyEv3. Maybe I'm just going to do a bunch of polls this year on Twitter. Maybe that'll be my thing. So come vote, come hang out, talk ball. Let's go.
And I am at BBrandsFWFB. I am currently hosting our Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast with Eric Mackey as we wrap up the basketball season. As Chuck was saying, we're very happy to have Draft as a sponsor on board with us right now. I do believe that we are going to be looking to try to have a contest on Draft between some of the staff and any of the listeners that would like to participate. I believe we're going to attempt to have a free league this week, potentially on Thursday, and a money league potentially on Friday. So continue listening to the rest of the podcast that will come out this week to see if that is in fact what we are planning on trying to do. And if you have any questions, like I said, you can hit me up on Twitter at BBrandsFWFB. Outside of that, we're looking forward to baseball
kicking off and having a great start to regular season. So from the rest of us at Friends of Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.